Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 128. And it's going to be an episode that features a guest that comes on this podcast quite frequently. And every time he does, we have a great time talking about movies. And for you avid listeners, you know already who I'm talking about. Of course, I'm talking about Mr. Paul Markoff. So Paul's coming on. We're going to talk about some of the movies that have come out here in the first half of 2017. I'm going to be very honest and just very frank and say that I will ruin a movie in our conversation. I will ruin a movie. If anybody was interested in catching the Paul Verhoeven film from last year called Elle, it's a French film, please be aware that I get on a rant and I apologize for this, but I think the movie's kind of shitty. I'm just going to be honest. And I just got on a whirlwind of ranting and I just couldn't stop myself. So I very well may ruin that movie for you, and I do apologize for that. But I'm leaving it in because it happened during the conversation, and it was just natural and organic, and so I'm leaving it in. And once again, I apologize for ruining Elle. But anyways, Paul, of course, is one of the co-hosts for Now Playing, a movie review show that airs on WOCC TV3 here in Westerville. Of course, that TV station is connected with Otterbein University, so it's a shame that it doesn't reach farther than Westerville in the north end of Columbus, but it is what it is. So you're going to kick back and hear some great movie talk with myself and Paul Markoff. And, you know, speaking of movies, I want to let you know that, indeed, if you love movies, there are some great books available to you through Audible that deal with movies. Like, for an example, maybe you want to read If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor by Bruce Campbell. They have it. That's right. And they're also a great, great sponsor bringing you today's podcast. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/PVDcast. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, your Android, your Kindle, your MP3 player, whatever device you want to use. And for you, the listeners of the PVDcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a 30-day trial to give you an opportunity to check out their great service. And like I said, maybe you want to check out something from a movie star that has written a book. I guarantee you that Audible has a huge selection in that genre. So to download your free audiobook today, just go to audibletrial.com/PVDcast. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/PVDcast for your free audiobook. All right, with that out of the way, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, Paul Markoff and I are going to sit down and talk some movies. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting down with Paul Markoff. We're ready to talk some movies. Paul, yeah. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing good. Back again?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I always like to get together to talk film.
That's right. We are two movie nerds, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Movie maniacs. Let's
there you go. That sounds a little better, yeah.
There you go. all right. As I told you off air, I haven't seen a lot in 2017, except for a handful of films, but I have been catching up on a lot of stuff from last year and previous years. So.
Okay.
How do you want to do this? Do you want to start off with, you want me to just throw out something?
Well,
I think the first thing that I saw here, and I'm trying to list it in the order in which they came out, Lego Batman movie.
Yeah.
Which came out in February, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it came out earlier this year.
Okay.
One of the rare preview screenings that I went to, took the whole family.
Okay.
I have two daughters, so.
Okay.
You know, don't think that the Lego Batman movie is just for little boys, because
no.
My kids enjoyed it.
Really?
Yeah, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it as well.
It was okay. I think this, the Lego movie,
you didn't
I think
it was
better. It was okay. By the middle of the film, it kind of seemed to be the same joke over and over.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit.
It is, to a certain extent.
You know, Robin's a pain in the butt, and, you know, I'm Batman, I'm cool. And after a while, it kind of wore a little bit on me. I don't think it's an awful film. I think the Lego movie is much better.
Story-wise, I suppose.
Yes.
Also, it's an original concept, at least.
Sure.
The first one is.
The first
one Although
was.
I understand they did some smaller stuff. It went straight to television mm-hmm. for Lego. But for all intent and purposes, the first one kind of had an original feel to it. Here, sure. It's to a certain extent, it's mimicking.
Right.
I still thought it was really funny. I thought it was probably as funny, if not funnier, than the original Lego movie. And I don't know, I like how in the Lego universe, if you will, for instance here, they didn't just have superheroes. They had all the superheroes you wanted in the Lego Batman movie.
Sure.
They also had dinosaurs and
true.
You know, all sorts of aliens.
Right.
And,
right. I mean, it was, regular people, too. Those are regular Lego people. Yeah.
Yeah, and what's great about animation or the Legos is there's no limit to, you know, the creative capacity, what they want to, how they want to incorporate it into their story. And I thought they did a wonderful job just basically throwing everything.
Oh, the special effects were great. Yeah, sure. The animation was great. I just think that this story wasn't as strong as it could have been.
Yeah, for that. It's basically, I mean, to a certain extent, I wouldn't disagree with your, it, in some ways, it's kind of the same mm-hmm. joke, at mm-hmm. least with Batman and mm-hmm. Robin and some of the other characters to a lesser extent. But
yeah.
I don't know, I guess I just like the one joke a lot better than you did.
Okay, so the next one that came out, which I believe was early March, Logan, which I really liked Logan. I really thought that finally we have a Wolverine movie that is good, because the other ones have not been so good.
The ones that are completely focused on
Wolverine. On him, yes. Yeah.
Right. I would agree, this is definitely the best of, yes. of those films.
Mm-hmm. What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. You know, it definitely earns its R rating.
But you know what? I think in that, just to interrupt, I think that part of that, I think, is what's been missing, because I think Wolverine is a violent character in the comic books. He's not.
He's violent in the other films. It's just you don't see
right.
what the result is of right. him using his powers.
Exactly. I really enjoyed the conflict between Logan and himself to try to be the mentor to the little kid, his struggles to deal with the father-like figure of Charles. So I really dug it. In fact, I mean, I've seen it on DVD a couple of weeks ago, and it still holds up. I still really, really liked it in its entirety.
Well, unlike the other films where they were more plot-driven or, what's the word I'm looking for, where origin story build or more centered around the Marvel Universe. This one's it really is a character drama.
Yes.
More than anything else.
It is.
I think that's, it has a unique feel to it mm-hmm. as opposed to some of these other films that are trying to build in some sort of mythology is the word I was looking for earlier.
Sure.
Develop, you know, how this one particular character exists in the X-Men universe and the Marvel universe. They're not really concerned about that. This
right.
is a story about a father and a daughter and the extraordinary situation that they find themselves
sure.
in.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, most definitely. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think that, there's something else I was going to mention about Wolverine. I totally forgot. I would like to see it in black and white, because I know they re-released it in black
yeah.
and white. I would like to see how it stands up, and I know it was here in town for like a week, legit, and then was gone.
Right.
Up in the gateway.
Yeah.
But I would like to see how it works in black and white to see if it's any more powerful or less powerful. And, that's what I was going to mention. It's based on a comic book, Old Man Logan, which I have not read. But, again, it's set in that dystopian future where, you know, mutants have kind of pretty much been all eliminated. And, you know, then you find small pockets of them. So I enjoyed. I enjoyed Logan.
Yeah, I thought it was good. Obviously, the story doesn't lend itself to, I mean, I guess there could be a sequel, but
yeah, probably not.
It's going to be limited on some characters.
It is. Yeah. Okay, this, I believe, came out in March, but I'm not 100% sure. And to be honest, it was the one that I'd heard all the hype for, but it lived up to the hype. Get Out.
Yeah, no, I wholeheartedly agree. I think
yes.
in a year that, to be honest, up to this point has been relatively disappointing.
Yes.
Get Out is probably, you know, it's definitely my top five at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's creepy. It's thrilling. It's kind of funny in some
yes,
spots.
Yes, I was going to say.
It's got some, you know, social critique going on in
yeah.
there. It's got a lot of things going
mm-hmm.
for it. And most of all, it genuinely works as a horror film that isn't enamored in, you know, guts and gore.
Right.
And is more on, you know, what's actually occurring with these characters and
right.
what's
yeah.
going on.
Yeah.
Very suspenseful.
Right. It is great suspense. There's one kind of uncomfortable, gory part, but, I mean, it's, you know, I think it's central to the plot. But I like the turns. I mean, there were some twists and turns to it that I will honestly say I didn't quite expect to see happen.
Very well acted. Like you mentioned the comedy angle, the sidekick, and I can't remember, I think his name was Rod. Wasn't that the character's name? I think so. It was hilarious.
Yeah, trying to get the cops involved.
And they're like, come on. Yeah, it was hilarious. But very well done. I mean, hats off to Jordan Peele for directing that. And I think did he write or co-write it? I think he had a hand in the creative process, but he certainly
known as a comedian, and he comes out and gives you something that, again, has moments of comedy, but is more or less, kind of a horror thriller.
Yeah, most definitely. I really liked it a lot. Then the next follow-up, which I believe is May, Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Disappointed.
Really?
Didn't care for Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Okay.
Did you see it?
I did. I liked it.
I think that's been the general consensus amongst... not only critics, but people that go see it. But the thing that I loved about... well, I don't know if I loved, but I give it a B. I give it a B, the first one a B. The thing I really enjoyed about the first one is it kind of played as an, for lack of a better term, extraterrestrial situation comedy. Where you have these superheroes that have a real eclectic mix of personalities really bouncing off each other, a lot of wise asses, smart Alex, and some are big and strong and others are small, and I thought it was extremely funny. As a straight comedy, I thought it worked, and that's because they were all together. They were bouncing all of this stuff off one another. In the second one, it's almost outside of the very probably the first 20 minutes and maybe the last 15 or 20. It's like they're dead set on keeping the Guardians of the Galaxy apart.
Yeah, good point.
They branch off. You don't see them much together.
No, you make a valid point on that. I guess I never looked at it that way. I enjoyed it, although I still think the first one's better. And I think now that you mentioned it, that's probably why I think the other one is better. Is that just, to me, it seemed more fun. That was always what I told people. I was like, I think number one, volume one is much more fun. It's more joyful and it's good. It's got action. Where this one, there's just something lacking. And now that you mention it, that's probably it. The lack of interaction between those, what are they, five characters? Yeah, five,
Yeah, and they introduced a couple more, but it's almost like they introduced a couple more again. So they're just kind of tacking on additional subplots. Sure. And it's funny, a lot of times I'm critical of films for doing the exact same thing that they did in the original.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I kind of wish they would have done that again.
Okay, we're moving on to what I think has been the best movie of 2017, and that's Wonder Woman.
I enjoyed it.
I think it's been the best film that I've seen. And again, I said loud and proud, I haven't seen a lot in 2017 because I agree with you. I think there hasn't been much that has tickled my fancy, so to speak. Like I got to go see that.
Right.
Wonder Woman was one of those though that I was excited to go see. I really wanted to go see it. I think it held up really well. It's beautifully shot, well acted, a really good backstory. I mean, if you're doing an origin story, this is probably how you should do it,
Yeah, and I think what works about it is, one, she's a big superhero.
Sure.
And I wasn't, I'm not hardcore comic book and superhero, but you're right. The backstory actually, it felt different. It felt new, and maybe it was because she was off in essentially a different world.
Yeah.
And they take time to kind of develop the world itself there
mm-hmm.
prior to her coming to the States. But I thought it was good. And a lot of the times you don't get this from some of the more modern comic book films is it's a real earnest film. Like it's genuine. It's kind of modest. The character itself. I enjoyed that about her. The character, I enjoyed that about her performance.
Mm-hmm.
And, even her love interest played by Chris Pine in the picture. He again is kind of an admirable, everyday middle class guy.
Yeah, most definitely. One thing I heard, and I've not really double checked this, but I heard that when it came time for set design, the set designer eliminated columns. Because columns being kind of phallic in nature in the, Iscaria, there's no men. So those had to be removed, even though that it's still that mythological type of architecture, but no columns. Because it's representative of men. There's no men on this island. Which that, I think, is ingenious. I would never have thought of that.
No.
If you said, John, here, we need to build a set. I don't know if I would have the mindset to really go, we can't have anything that's reminiscent of men on that island. But so far, that's it. I think that is the the movie right now for me of 2017, unless something comes along here. And we have some contenders. I mean,
I think I've seen some that have already been out the year.
Okay. And then this is the last thing that I've seen recently, Spider-Man Homecoming.
I really enjoyed it.
Did you really enjoy it? Okay.
Yeah, all right. I did. I think next to maybe one, I put it up there right there with the second Spider-Man as far as... And I've enjoyed even Spider-Man 3 with Tobey Maguire. I even recommended that on Now Playing. I enjoy Spider-Man. But the funny thing is, after our last recording, a couple recordings ago of Now Playing, I was speaking with my co-host, Mark Pfeiffer, about the reason why I originally liked the first Spider-Man is the exact opposite reason that I like this Spider-Man.
Well, why is that?
Well, when the original Spider-Man came out, comic book movies were kind of second tier, you know.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You know, pure entertainment, disposable, mm-hmm. you know, entertainment. The first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst, there was a little more struggle. There's a little more drama.
There's some depth to it. Yeah.
Yes,
sure.
Yes. And I really like that about that. Mm-hmm. It kind of set forth the motion of superhero comic book movies, that there was a little something more to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then it led into the Dark Knight series, and that got really heavy.
Yeah.
You know? And what I like about Spider-Man Homecoming is it's just real easy, fun, exciting. I don't want to say disposable, but... There's not a, you know, Spider-Man doesn't succeed in the end of Spider-Man Homecoming. It's not the end of the world. Literally, it's not the end of the world.
Right. You know what? I agree. I liked it. I think Tom Holland does a great job as Spider-Man because I feel like, and again, this is from my background in the comic, is Peter Parker's supposed to be awkward and weird and not, you know, he's supposed to be an awkward teenager, just for lack of a better description. And I think he plays it very, very well. I thought Michael Keaton did a great job.
He was really good.
There was some depth there as to why this guy was doing what he did.
He wasn't just pure evil for being pure evil.
And the twist, you know, which I don't want to ruin it for anybody that hasn't seen it just yet, but the twist was good.
Yes, I did not see that coming.
No, I didn't either. My gripe is this. This is my gripe about, there was two things that I didn't like about the movie. And the one I can overlook, but the other one I just can't. The one that I can overlook was I didn't really enjoy in the middle part of the film where the Spider-Man suit was the robot. You know what I mean? Like it had all the gadgets like an Iron Man suit. To me, that diminishes the character because I want to see Spider-Man with his regular spider powers fight evil. Not with his regular spider powers enhanced now because he has Tony Stark's super awesome suit that can do pretty much everything and he's indestructible. And I don't know. That... To me, that diminished a little bit of the feel of the movie. I liked where he, before he knew, and then afterwards when he had the suit removed from him.
Okay.
You know, like, I liked that part.
Well, and I think that kind of plays into the storyline of him being obsessed with having the power.
Sure.
You know, developing it, using it, is that he had kind of become obsessed with the power.
Sure.
Due in large part to the fact, and the suit provided him with those capabilities.
Right. And I can overlook that one. The one that I can't overlook, and I'm sorry, I still have a problem with Marissa Tomei's hot, young, cool Aunt May. Just can't, I'm sorry, I just cringe every time she's on screen.
See, and I think this is where people that are really into the comics, and I'm guessing that diverts from how the comics work.
Well, but no,
because
no.
I had no problem with it because I'm not...
Well, but see, in the comics, she's like grandmotherly old Aunt May, and I don't like that character either.
Okay.
I just don't like... I don't like the idea. Like, Sally Field was a great Aunt May because she's got that grandeur on the screen of being a strong woman, but she's got like rules and there's things you should do and there's like a responsibility factor from her and there's a respect. Cool Aunt Marissa Tomei just like, oh, I'm gonna drop you off at a party and there might be drugs and drinking and you know just but have a great time. Like, I just don't. It just bothers me. She's just so, you know, and at the end when she might cuss and they cut to it, I'm like, I just don't dig it.
That's not Aunt May to you. I guess
that's not Aunt May to me.
To me, Aunt May is so secondary to Spider-Man that I guess, you know.
Okay.
I didn't mind because.
It just drives me crazy and, you know, but I digress. Overall,
They do incorporate some jokes into it. So I think I think that's why I more easily accept Marissa Tomei in there, is they play along. It's almost, and obviously you didn't think, obviously didn't think it was too funny if you like didn't like Marissa Tomei, but I almost think as if the filmmakers were acknowledging that people are going to be skeptical of Marissa Tomei, so we're going to poke fun at ourselves by having her in the role by you know what?
Maybe Tony Stark. Yeah, if I view it a second time, maybe I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, because I don't know how many jokes Tony Stark makes at the.
He does make a few of them. Yeah. So that wraps up for me. What else have you checked out in 2017? Probably a lot more than me.
A few more, yeah.
Yes.
Although, to be honest, you've hit some of the ones I've enjoyed the most. To be honest, the best film I've seen was the last film that I saw. Really hard to
what was put it the into film,
Detroit. Detroit.
Oh, okay. By Catherine Bigelow, correct? She's behind it, the director in that, I believe.
Yes. Okay. The director of The Hurt Locker.
Hurt Locker and
Zero Dark Thirty.
Yep.
Yeah, she centers her films around real life events.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. She does so again here, where there was rioting in 1967 Detroit, a lot of racial tension, mm-hmm. and there was a situation in one of the hotels where. In the midst of the rioting, they suspected one of the rioters was a sniper in a hotel trying to pick off law enforcement officers. So the Detroit police force goes into the hotel, and they basically do anything to the occupants of the hotel to find out who the sniper was.
Mm.
And obviously they skirt law well beyond reason. And it's a tough film to watch, and I guess that's why it was hard for me to kind of put into place what and how I felt about the picture, because it has such, it's very powerful.
And it's probably going to get a lot of Oscar buzz too, I presume, because I think that, Catherine Bigelow has that weight in Hollywood, and not to discredit the film itself, but I imagine that it's probably going to get a lot of Oscar buzz.
I would imagine. I mean, it's a terrific film.
Sure.
Two, what it's centered around, it's very timely. It's a story, to be quite frank with you, I wasn't altogether familiar with.
You know what? And you're not the only one, because I looked it up when I saw commercials for it. I saw an ad for it. I want to say on like Spike TV or something when I was flipping through, and I immediately picked up the iPad and was like, I don't even know what's this based on, because they tell you it's based on a true story. I'm like, what?
That's another thing. I think she's very open with the fact that these are recollections of individuals that she had spoken with at the end of the... I'm not giving anything away. There's something at the end of the film that acknowledges that she spoke with individuals that were in the hotel. This is their recollection of the events. And I don't think it really pigeonholes... although, again, the police are out of order in their interrogation techniques in the hotel. I don't think it's trying to make a blanket statement about law enforcement or those that they're trying to combat. I think it's fairly even-handed, and if you're willing to go see something that's just not just light entertainment, I hate to use the term enjoy because it's very uncomfortable, but I think people really respect and admire what she's done with the film.
All right, what else?
Completely different, more towards Spider-Man Homecoming.
We're going on the other end of the spectrum, folks.
It's a film called Baby Driver.
And that's Edgar Wright, isn't it?
Yes.
And I've heard very good things about it, but I'm going to be honest, the commercials do nothing for me. Much like Get Out didn't do much for me, this is going to be one that I'm going to have to really like buckle down and go, okay, let's go and check this out. So what do you think of Baby Driver?
I liked it a lot. It's Spider-Man Homecoming, Get Out, Detroit. Those are all up there as some of the best films that I've seen so far this year. And it's an action picture, kind of a drama though as well, about a driver for a group of criminals that pull off these heists. He's sensory deficient from an accident he had as a child. And he has an iPod, and he wears earbuds, and he drives to the sound of the music that's playing at the time.
Really?
And that's kind of how the film works. It's not okay. It's not a musical because people don't sing, but the but the film moves to the beat of what he's listening to on
his iPod. That's a unique twist.
Yeah, it really is. And, I mean, it's you know, it's really enjoyable. It's funny. The cast is great.
Yeah, because is that Jamie Foxx is in it? Is
Jamie Foxx. He's not Baby Driver, though. Ansel. No. I'm trying to think how to pronounce his name. It's Ansel Elgort. Who was from The Fault in Our Stars. Which was a romantic drama which came out, I think, about 3 years ago. He's pretty good in that. He's really good in this. He is Baby Driver, the driver that's driving these criminals around. Jamie Foxx is one of the criminals. Kevin Spacey is the leader of this gang that pulls off the separate heist. John Hamm's in it. It's really well done. To a certain extent, you're not sure where the film's going to go to.
Okay.
Which, typically, when they spend some money on Hollywood pictures, they tend to be predictable. This one is not.
Cool. Did you venture out to see Transformers?
I did not.
Oh,
we passed after. Okay. how many Transformers? Is it the fifth Transformers?
I think it is.
Yeah, after the last three.
And it wouldn't be an episode with you and I if we didn't rag on the Transformers, because I think we do that every single episode.
Yes, but I can't this time because we passed for the show. My co-host says it's the best of the bunch, and he gives this one a C+.
Oh, wow.
You know, after the last three that fell somewhere in the C minus to D plus range to D range for me, I told him, I said, you know what? This is a critic proof film. Regardless of what we say, regardless of what anyone says, people are going to go see it.
Yeah.
You want to see, you know, robots destroy
each other.
Have sheet metal fly at the screen and loud music. Yeah. I'm not sure that this is the fifth film, and I think each of them is about 2 1/4.
Yeah.
So we're talking about 11 hours worth of alien robots fighting Earth.
Yeah.
You can't tell me there's enough plot to justify probably even one movie at that length.
So what about, I'm trying to think of the other big ones that have come out. Skull Island.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
You enjoyed that one. I've heard that it's got a lot more depth to its human characters, which is maybe something that has been lacking in other, quote, monster, end quote, movies.
John C. Reilly. There's a little more to John C. Reilly's character.
And Samuel Jackson as well.
Yeah, not as much so as Samuel Jackson.
He's pretty stereotypical.
Yeah. He's more the... Well, no. Riley's more the Kurtz character from Apocalypse Now. But, Riley's character is the one that's kind of fully fleshed out, and you see his story more or less from beginning to end.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's basically about a big ape and all the other big creatures that are on this island. And although the action scenes aren't as well orchestrated, they're not even in the same ballpark as the original Jurassic Park, or even to a lesser extent, the more recent Jurassic World, they still... If you're into monster movies and you like to see kind of these unique creatures and, you know, again, in a day and age where we have blockbusters that come out every weekend, this one actually felt like it. And I think that says something in the day and age that we're operating in, that a big monkey movie comes out and it feels like a big monkey
movie. And it's a big deal.
Yeah.
It feels like an event.
And for those that haven't seen it, and I normally don't stay through to the end credits unless I enjoy the picture, this one is well worth it, sticking all the way to the end.
Okay. Is there an extra scenes?
There is an extra scene, and it's important.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll keep that in mind. I did not go see it yet, so maybe I might catch it on DVD, or maybe if it comes to the second run theater. What else? I'm trying to think what else.
Beauty and the Beast came out, I think, a week before Kong Skull Island.
Yeah, okay. All right.
And again, it pales in comparison to the animated film. I love the animated film. We did the, 25 year release of the animated version. That's an amazing picture.
This is live action, correct?
Yeah, they add some additional background with Belle and her father and the Beast, and none of that really amounts to much. But again, kind of in the same terms of, I give it the same grade as Kong Skull Island in terms of this kind of grand scale production. And they threw hundreds upon millions of dollars at this. You see it in terms of the castle and the Bell's village and the costumes. Everything is tremendous, and the musical scores work. They're really well done. I think people that go and see it will probably won't be disappointed when it comes, at least to those terms, of musical, which is what it's known for.
Sure,
But it's a little longer.
Okay, all right. I'm trying to think what else has been out recently. What else is on your list, so to speak, there before we kind of dive into, because you just mentioned the musicals, and I have something to talk about with you in terms of musicals, but what else?
The Big Sick, I just saw.
Oh, yeah, I've wanted to see that. That's on my radar. And, of course, we overlooked Dunkirk. We talk about blockbusters. I have yet to see it. I tried to fit it in before we recorded this podcast, but nonetheless, I couldn't do it.
That's a real unique
Dunkirk.
Yeah, it's more or less a straight. They don't have to go too much into the details. Everybody knows what was going on during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
They give you kind of a quick synopsis of what's going on. There's three different stories told in Dunkirk that eventually overlap.
Okay,
there's a story about a British soldier that's trying to. They're on the beaches of Dunkirk, and he's trying to get back to home.
Mm-hmm.
That storyline spans a week. Then there is Mark Rylance and his son and his friend have a sailboat, and they're going to come help get some of these soldiers off off of Dunkirk, off the beach of Dunkirk. That story is told over a day. And then there are fighter pilots that are trying to fend off the Nazi forces that are bombing the beach, and it falls to fighter pilots. And their story is told, their story is told over an hour.
Wow.
So it's, it overlap. Each of them overlap at certain points. It's terrifically made. Again, there's not much built into the characters because it's more or less three kind of separate endings to an action film.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You have the guys coming in from the sailboat, the people trying to flee the beach, and then the fighter pilots
trying to assist those people leaving or trying to leave the beach.
And eventually they overlap.
Okay.
But it's an amazing action picture. And again, like I said, what they lose for in character depth, you already have it's already built in since it's World War II.
Gotcha. What did we talk about before Dunkirk?
The big sick, which is, again, completely different.
Yes, going going opposite end again.
But I complain all the time, at least off the air, to my co-host, Mark Pfeiffer, with Now Playing, about how they don't make enough romantic comedies. And here's one. It's based on a real-life story of a Pakistani comedian that came to the States, met a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly, just after their kind of breakup, he finds out they're not sure what's wrong, but she gets taken to the hospital. She gets sick. She goes into the hospital. And then he meets her parents. And they befriend one another. And then it's about their dealings with her in the hospital and him being a comedian.
The ethnic and racial kind of.
There's that where his side of the family is trying. They're Muslim. They believe in design marriages.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes over to his parents. I don't know how often it's supposed to be in the movie. At least once a week. And somebody popped in. Come on in and have dinner with us. Yeah. So they play that up. He's obviously a comedian. So there's some funny things going on there. It's really kind of offbeat and unique. And I know romantic comedies aren't going to gross
hundreds of millions of dollars.
And that's why
they're
not putting money into it. But dang it, we need more romantic comedies. And if they were made like The Big Sick, I think we'd probably get more of those.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to talk about some of the things that I've caught up on. And you can chime in as well. Speaking of romantic comedies and musicals, I got to see La La Land.
And
I know last time that you were here, we debated whether I would really appreciate it or not because I don't know. I didn't have a stance on musicals. I liked it, but I'm not sure about how I feel about the musical aspect to it. Like, I enjoyed the plot, I enjoyed the story, I thought the resolution was phenomenal, well acted, beautiful cinematography, but I told everybody, because much like you, I give grades to film, I gave it an incomplete, because I'm like, I liked
incomplete.
It.
Incomplete?
But I don't know how I feel about
it. Sounds like
musical.
A cop-out.
No, it does, well, because you're right, maybe it is a cop-out, I don't... I just don't, like, I liked it, but there was just something weird about the, like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm just not a musical guy, maybe. I don't know.
Have you not? You've seen musicals before, right? That wasn't your
first
musical.
That was your second musical. I've only seen Tommy. Oh, okay. That's it. Okay, so, okay. Like, that's what I'm thinking. Like, maybe if I had seen all the other ones, maybe if I go back and see Singing in the Rain and Oklahoma and others, then I can go, okay, I get it. You know, that's why I gave it the incomplete.
Okay.
Because I'm not sure how to gauge it or how to grade it.
I mean, it's one of my favorite. I love it. It's one of my favorite movies. Period. I normally wouldn't say something like that immediately after. I mean, it's not immediately after, but it's been a few months. But typically, I think it takes some time to understand where your love for a film falls in regard to all the other films that you've seen.
Sure.
But I think I knew pretty well after, probably a month after I'd watched it. Probably. Oh, wow. I probably watched it 5 times in a month because this was one that they had sent me on screener.
Okay.
But yeah, I love the music. I love, like you said, the story, the performances.
Yeah.
Even though the dancing and the singing itself are not up to, for lack of a better term, professional standards. I mean, Gosling and Stone hold their own. But the music itself, I think, is wonderfully incorporated and really moves tonally what the characters are going through internally. Okay. And I don't know.
Well, maybe I need to go to Video Central and rent some more musicals, and then maybe I can revisit this topic later.
No, right.
Maybe. See how they gauge. Because again, fair. I don't, that's why I kind of was.
Because you've seen The Wizard of Oz, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. I have seen The Wizard of Oz. Musical. Okay, yes, that is a musical.
Sound of Music?
No.
Never Sound of Music.
No. No.
And what was the other one? You mentioned Oklahoma. Tommy. There's another big one.
Oh, Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain. Yeah, I've never seen that. So. I was going to say Singing in the Rain, Wizard of Oz, Sound of Music,
Oklahoma. Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of
what. Fiddler on the Roof?
That's another one.
There's another big one. Okay, so I have some homework to do.
I am. Yeah, even some of the modern ones are pretty good. Chicago's pretty good.
Okay, yeah.
Check that one out.
Not Burlesque?
I don't even know. We didn't do that for the
Cher and Christina Aguilera.
Yeah, we didn't do that.
Okay. All right. Here's another one that I thought was fantastic. Manchester by the Sea.
Yes.
The last time we talked, I had not seen it. Just absolutely gripping. And just, I mean, you know, you talked about Detroit maybe not being enjoyable.
That's the same. Yes.
I would say, you know, I think if the movie moves you that way, it's enjoyable because you got something out of it.
Yes.
And see, this I think was the case with Manchester by the Sea. Well done. Phenomenal. Really enjoyed it. I think the other one from 2016 that I did not get a chance to see was Star Trek Beyond, the third installment of the reboot, which I think is the best out of those three movies.
We're going to disagree on this one.
Okay. All right.
They're all starting to blend together to a certain extent. I enjoyed the first Star Trek. I enjoyed the reboot.
Yeah, the first one's good. Yeah, the second one's not very good at all.
Yeah, I don't remember as much. I don't even remember that much about the third one. Maybe you can reintroduce
me. The third one was where they were stuck on that resonant planet, and they had the one young lady who was going to assist them. She was the alien that was going to assist them off the planet, you know, because there was I can't remember the villain's name, but he had held them captive, and then the Enterprise was pretty much destroyed.
Right. Yeah. And it's starting to come back to me now.
Yeah. So it was, I don't know. I thought it was okay. I mean, I didn't mind it. I agree with you. I think the first one's the best one.
Yeah. First one definitely the best. To a certain extent, some of the Star Treks just start to blend together.
Yeah.
Because there's there's a lot of them. There's only so many different storylines you can.
I agree.
Run across.
Now here's where I will rant profusely. The last 2016 film, I checked out Elle, which of course got some buzz for Oscars.
Yeah, that was one I didn't get a chance to check out.
Paul Van Hooven. It's awful. It's an F. And the reason why I say that is because I loathe when a movie does the bait and switch. Here's the trailer. This is what we're pitching this as. And then it's nothing like that. It's pitched as a revenge film, as a vengeance film. It is nothing of the sort. It is just some weird, crazy, cockamamie family drama. And it is terrible. I mean, it's awful. I was very disappointed in it.
All right, that's one they did not. I don't think they sent us the screener on. Yeah,
maybe that's why it's not good. It's just,
well, she got a lot of
Hype. Right, and
I'm trying to think if she was up for the Academy Award.
She was up for Best Actress. Okay. I mean, let's be honest. Paul Van Hooven has done some weird stuff. I mean, he's the guy behind Starship Troopers and RoboCop and
Basic Instinct.
And,
he's all over the place.
Yeah, I think Total Recall maybe too. I think
I think so. Yeah.
So he's done some
his perversion. Are out on. I mean, he doesn't hold anything back.
No, but the movie is, you know, as many people know, the movie is about a woman that's sexually assaulted in her own home, and the trailer makes it seem like, well, she's going to get revenge, and it's built that whole entire first section of the film is built upon that. She's learning how to shoot a gun. She went and bought pepper spray. You're trying to figure out who did it, and there's some great twists that they use. Like, for an example. She won't go to the police because she doesn't trust the police because they mentioned 36 years prior to this, when she was 10 years old, her father was convicted of a crime and it was big news in France. And he's going to come up for parole. So you're thinking, wow, maybe it's one of those, you know, people, because there's even a scene in there where one of the people who just a random character in a coffee shop, like, spills food on her because her father's getting out of jail, or could be, and he's a murderer, you know? And you're like, well, maybe it's one of them. And you're so, I'm so captivated. What's going to happen? And then midway, for the first, maybe the second act of the film, it gets all twisted and weird and goofy, and that you find out who the rapist is, and she falls in love with him, and it's the dashing guy across. By the way, spoiler alert for anybody listening, but
a little late on that spoiler.
I don't care. I don't even care.
I'd have to re-edit this podcast.
No, I'm not re-editing it, Paul. This is how much I hate this film, because I hate that, and it just, it goes nowhere. And then they break up, and then he tries to assault her again, and then her son kills him. It's stupid. It's just absolutely, like, horrible.
I think you just ridiculous. Told. I think
you well, think and, Paul Van Hooven's going to be suing
there's
me.
The complete film synopsis, right
yeah,
there.
Right there. I hate that. Like, if you're pitching the movie, that is going to be this. I give you that you could deviate from it a little bit, but that's a complete 180.
Oh, sure.
I mean, yes. I guarantee you look at the trailer, you're going to go, "Oh, okay, it's a revenge film." No, it's not. So, anyways, I'm done ranting. I'm off my soapbox. So, sorry.
So that's how we're finishing up your 2016 screeners.
That's it.
Not a sour note.
Not a sour note. Well, you know what though? But no, I've gone back and watched a lot of really good films. The Fortune Cookie, which is a 1966 film. Billy Wilder. It's the very first Lemon and Mathal team up, which was phenomenal movie. I've heard about
never
it.
Never seen it.
It was really well done. I mean, it's Lemon and Mathal. You gotta love that, you know, back and forth.
Oh,
they
sure,
have. They
yeah,
the chemistry.
Yeah. I enjoyed The Odd Couple, and
you
know, obviously, decades later.
Sure,
Grumpy Old Man.
Sure, two flicks that the Capital Summer Movie Series had, both Hitchcock films, Suspicion, which I believe was 1941 with Cary Grant and Joan Fontaine. Not very good. I was very disappointed in it. It's just there's no twists, so you expect a twist in a Hitchcock movie. There's
typically,
no twists.
Although the irony is the other. Hitchcock Grant film did not have much
true.
In it. It
very
was,
true.
You know.
And I Confess, which was his 1953 film, which was really good. I liked that a lot. Montgomery Clift was the star in that.
I was going to say they won a little more, Kappa won a little more Hitchcock.
They did, with the obscure stuff. They mentioned that. They said I Confess is considered one of his disasters because it was not. It did not do well at the box office, but yet critically it was acclaimed as a great film. And it is really good. You know, and I think it came right before North by Northwest. So they said, you know. So another one that I've heard a lot about, The Friends of Eddie Coyle, which is an old mob film from 1973 with Robert Mitchum, Peter Boyle. Very good. It's kind of...
another Kappa?
No, it was not. Okay. I actually checked this one out on DVD. It was recommended to me by a friend. Really well done, and kind of neat to see Peter Boyle as not the cranky old father of Ray Romano. You know, more just like a criminal.
Right, yeah.
You know? So let's see other things real quick. I'm trying to think. I fit in Coolie High from 1975, which is a coming of age tale about. Some African-American kids growing up in Chicago.
Yeah, I've heard of that one.
Yeah.
Never had a chance to see it.
It's okay. It's not bad. Some of the characters I felt were a little one-dimensional,
okay.
But not bad. of course. Oh, we're talking about Capcom. Forgot about For Your Eyes Only. Little Bond.
Okay.
James Bond. Which, you know, it still holds up all right. I liked
it. I was going to say, Bond has never done it for me.
I know.
It's the same.
It is.
It's the same.
I'm going to throw out, I checked out a great blaxploitation film, Brotherhood of Death, which, here, this is all you need to know about it. African-American guys leave the United States, go to Vietnam. They learn how to be Green Berets. They come back home to their Alabama town, and the KKK is in town. That's all you need to know.
I don't know. I might have to check that one out.
It's on YouTube. You can watch it for free.
That sounds pretty good.
It was good. Of course, I the last couple of things, went down to the Gateway to see some of their cult films that they've been showing on Thursday nights.
Yeah, they got a terrific.
They do. They do.
Perfect lineup there.
Sadly, not very well attended. I've gone to two. I went to go see Memento, one of my favorites.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one.
Eight people in the theater.
Really?
Yeah. Then I decided the following week to go see Death Race 2000. Seven people in the theater. I'm like, come on, people. These are some great epic films.
Death Race 2000.
Yeah. You don't remember that one with David Carradine and Sylvester Stallone? Where they have to race across America? You're familiar with? Never seen?
No, I haven't seen it. I've heard of it, but yeah, that wouldn't have been one I probably would have.
Yeah,
Memento, I would have. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the one that put Nolan on the map.
On the map, yeah.
You know, it's definitely completely off the charts, different than anything that I had ever seen before.
Sure, in terms
of the narrative.
And I think we have to end with this before we start talking about upcoming movies, because I know we talked about it on the last podcast. I did sit down and watch the documentary. The Best Most Beautiful Things, which was about a young lady who was autistic and also legally blind and might have been involved in the sex trade. I watched that documentary, and actually she is not involved. I was wrong. That was erroneous. She is legally blind. She is slightly autistic, but she is not involved in the sex trade.
Okay. So
she's not a dominatrix. She just does that in her private life, as is explained in the film. Film itself, not bad. It just, I think the whole documentary focuses on how people with disabilities, in this case she's blind, went to special school, to help her. But then once you graduate, you're on your own. There you go.
Okay.
Figure it out. Figure out life on your own.
Right, yeah.
And how she struggled because, as legally blind, you have a hard time seeing. No one's going to hire you, and it was more along those lines. So, maybe I made it sound more salacious than it was in the last podcast.
The Best Most Beautiful Thing.
Yeah. Okay. So there you go. Anything else you've seen that you want to throw out there? Before we talk about things that are coming up.
I think everything that I gave at least a B plus or above.
There's nothing you want to rant about like I did.
I like Carter. Well, I mean, some of the ones I saw. Oh, you mean ones that I really disliked?
Yeah.
I saw A Ghost Story, which I would say is a great example of why people don't like independent cinema.
Oh.
It stars Rooney Mara and Casey Affleck.
Yes.
As a couple that they reside in this home. He's involved in a car accident. This is not a spoiler alert, because if you know anything about the movie, he dies. And then he comes back as a ghost. A ghost that you're familiar with from something like the Charlie Brown Halloween special, where he actually has a white sheet over him. So, for all I know, Casey Affleck isn't even the actor, but underneath the white sheet. So this white sheet just continues to show up around the house and Rooney Mara. And
it's a good thing he didn't run into the guys from the Brotherhood of Death. They might have, mistaken him for a KKK member. Maybe it would have made the film better.
It would have made some of the scenes a heck of a lot shorter and more enjoyable.
So that's one to kind of maybe avoid.
Yeah, that's one, unless you're really into experimental cinema.
Okay. Right.
And even if you are, because I don't have any objection to... kind of more
right, but there's some better things to go see.
This is real pretentious stuff.
Actually,
it stopped playing at the Drexel. The Big Sick is still showing at the Drexel. Go see that.
There you go.
Go see the Big Sick.
Any other things you totally panned?
No, to be honest, since we've narrowed down the number of films we review every other week on Playing, we used to do 8 for several years. Then I had a couple kids. Scaled back my film watching. We do 4, so I value my time. I try to make sure I'm going to see things that I like.
Right.
So,
yeah. All right, so let's talk about things that are coming up that you might be interested in and things that you're looking forward to. I will tell you one that I am excited for that the trailer dropped just the other day was the remake of Death Wish. Speaking of revenge films, I'm a big fan of the original.
I've never seen the original.
I'm a big fan of the original. Yeah, with Bronson. Big fan of the original. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that Bruce Willis does this justice.
Now, I haven't seen the original, but is there humor in the original?
I thought
it was pretty much straight.
It's straight serious.
Yeah. Hardcore. Yes. You know, he's out for revenge, and he's going to be a vigilante assisting. Does he assist others, or is he just pretty much out for the
No, guys, he's out to killing bad guys. Yeah, shooting bad guys. But
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, I thought it was all personal in the original.
Yes, in the original it is personal.
Well,
yes.
Here, I mean, it starts personal, and then he starts assisting others as a vigilante.
Yeah.
And it also seems kind of playful.
There is some playfulness to it.
The trailer for this one, you'd almost think it's a... I say a comedy, but
a dark comedy, maybe.
I mean, there's a lot of supposed laughs. There is.
But I have hope that it'll be good. I know that Joe Carnahan is the writer for it. He did not direct it, but he wrote it. And I'm a big fan of Joe Carnahan.
Yeah, but Eli Roth is the director, and that makes me instantly skeptical off the bat.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. Well, I think it'll be good.
The trailer's terrifically put together, and again, I haven't seen the original, so I have no issues with the film being remade.
Gotcha. I think Lucky Logan is another one that is on my radar.
Yeah, that comes
with
out.
Adam Driver and Daniel Craig. Yeah, and I think Katie Holmes is in it. And is it Channing Tatum? Yeah.
Yeah, and Steven Soderbergh.
Yes. Yeah.
Directs it.
Yeah, that one looks interesting. You know, I think that should be a good one to maybe check out.
Yeah, he does some different stuff.
He does.
You know, still always gets great cast. He did all the Ocean's films. But has done other things as well.
Sure.
You know, like Traffic and others before that. He gets these great casts together. I mean, we're not talking 3-4 actors. We're talking anywhere from 8 to 10 to 12. And he pulls each of them off.
Yeah. We got some big ones coming up.
Right. Yeah. Well.
Which Star Wars. Let's see. Star Wars at the end of the year.
Last Jedi.
Which looks to be phenomenal. I'm excited for it. I want to see what they do with it. I think we have Justice League coming up. Is that November? Justice League? I believe so.
I'm just scrolling down the movie release list as we talk. But yeah, I think it's maybe October.
No, I think it's November. I think I just saw it there on your screen, the 17th. So, I think that you got the Thor movie coming out, which I think the trailer to that one looks really good. Of the Thor
movies.
It's
okay. I enjoyed the first Thor.
I did not see the second one yet.
Second one, not as much.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it could be a return to the original.
Sure.
A lot of times they flub up the second one and kind of gain their ground again with the third one.
I want to see the one that's on your screen right now, the Professor Marsden and the Wonder Woman. I think that's interesting. The biopic on Professor Marsden, the gentleman who created Wonder Woman. And how he was quite controversial because as Wonder Woman is such a standard now for strong female characters, at the beginning when he first started creating her, there was some very weird S&M type of vibe to her, and that she was not seen as being an equal as some of the male characters, and it's supposedly really well done, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. So, tell them the true story of it.
I'll have to put that on the radar. I'm looking forward to a remake. I haven't seen the original, but the trailer, I think, is terrific for Murder on the Orient Express.
Yes, that does look very good, too. Yes, yes. Phenomenal.
And I guess part of the reason that maybe I enjoy the trailer as much as I do is because we don't get... And this is more of a teaser trailer, which I wish more films would be, is you get the bare bones synopsis of what's going on. They don't give away any plot points. You see the big names. You know what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's all you need.
Sure.
I mean, I understand why some people want to know exactly what they're going in to see, which is why they give away too much in the trailer. I don't know. Give me a quick synopsis and who's in it, and tease me and make me anxious for the film, and that'll do it. And that teaser trailer for Murder on the Orient Express is terrific.
What about Suburbicon, which I think is with Matt Damon and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, is the Coen brothers involved in that? No. I think it
yes,
is.
Yes,
yes. Yes, it is the Coen brothers.
Yeah, I think they're directing that.
I think they're at least writing it. Yes, they're writing it. I'm not sure if they are indeed directing it or not, but Oscar Isaac is in it as well. It looks really well done. It looks weird.
No, it's directed by Clooney.
George Clooney. There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, they wrote it. They wrote it with Clooney.
Yeah, so yeah, all in that camp of the Coen brothers.
Right.
That certainly is a good one. I'm trying to think of other things that are coming out here in the later half of the year. I'm trying to think of the Disaster Artist, which I'm very fond of the movie that it makes fun of. So The Room, of course, done by
yes.
Tommy Wiseau.
Still showing at the Drexel.
That's right. Well, apparently, Seth Rogen and James Franco are doing a movie about the making of that movie. So I would like to see it. But I also am fearful that it's going to make The Room now like cool and hip and legitimate.
I think it is. I mean, it's cool and hip and legitimate for all the wrong reasons right now, I would argue.
True.
Which, I mean, obviously, for a film that's that bad.
Yes.
To be, what are they? They're
I don't know. It's not really a biopic, but it's
no,
like,
no,
yeah,
they're basically
like,
making fun of it. They're doing a fictional account of the making of
one of the worst films. Well, apparently, it's based on a book I was unaware of called The Disaster Artist, and the guy that was either the assistant director or the director of photography or whatever under Wiseau wrote this book about how god-awful it was to work on this film and how it was a complete train wreck. And so Franco is going to go ahead and make this into a movie. So,
all right. And will they be starring?
Yes. Franco and Rogan are both in it.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of that team-up anymore.
Really?
I got to be honest. No. I'm not a big fan of Franco and Rogan anymore. They've run their course with me, and I'm done with them.
Well, maybe this will give them a second win.
With me.
I mean, I've enjoyed them. I'm trying to think of the last one that they did together.
Is it the Christmas one? The Christmas movie that they did?
If it is, that you're right. Maybe they have run their course.
Because that was not good. That movie was not funny at all. What was it called?
I mean, they weren't the two leads. That's the one that had...
The computer right here. We can look it up. I don't know why we're... but anyways, yeah.
Because sometimes it still takes too long to watch.
Yeah, I know. Anyways, but that basically... they've kind of run their course with me. I'm not too cool on them, but it's not This Is the End. It's...
No, because I enjoy This Is the End. And that's,
yes, that
that's,
was a good one.
That's one of theirs.
I can't remember what it's called now, darn it.
You just scroll down the... Pineapple Express was good. I enjoyed The Interview, which is lesser.
Yes.
Rogan Franco.
I never saw. The Night Before. That's what it was.
Yeah, but
they've done plenty after
Franco's contribution to that is lesser.
He's
a secondary character.
Yes, he is. It's mostly Rogan. You're right. But anywho, I'm trying to think of anything else. I'm very excited for Star Wars. Can't wait to see what they do with it. There's lots of theories that some people have told me that I'm not going to expound upon on this podcast, but if those rumors are true, it'll make it very interesting as to how fans will react to that.
Yeah, I suspect it'll be as terrific. Well, I hope it's as terrific as Episode 7.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, it's important because it's leading into the last episode
right,
of
right,
the entire
right
saga,
and I'm
mean,
a huge,
9 episodes
right,
and these are to me this is a even though the first three were the first one particularly I would give a pass to the two episodes 2 and 3 in the Star
Wars
saga.
I just think they were okay. They were okay.
Enough.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I mean, this is the most popular franchise, mm-hmm. So we're getting towards the end. These episodes are becoming even more and more important.
Yes, and Rian Johnson, who I'm a huge fan of. Brick was phenomenal.
Right.
Looper was very, very, very well done. So I'm excited to see what he can do in the Star Wars universe. So
yeah, I expect to see something maybe a little different than we've seen
mm-hmm.
in the past episodes. Mm-hmm. But I really thought Abrams did a terrific job with Episode 7.
Sure. Yes, I agree.
And too. I would have been fine with him finishing up the series, but.
Mm-hmm. He's got other things going on.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. He's a busy guy.
He's a busy dude. All right. Anything else you want to say here? We're getting up to like about 56 minutes or so. So anything else Any other movies come to mind that you wanted to touch base on? Anything you've seen on DVD or Netflix or whatnot?
I'm trying to think what we've done recently for the show. I just saw Creep, which I didn't care for. It's a indie movie with Mark Duplass.
Okay.
I don't want to give too much away, but it lives up to its title. Let's just say that.
All right.
It's not as creepy as I had hoped for. Oh, okay. And I think part of it is I'm too familiar with Duplass to to really be spooked by him, I guess.
What about Annabelle Creation? Did you guys review that for the show?
We didn't do that for the show. That didn't make the cut. But yeah, our most recent edition, we're doing The Big Sick, Detroit. I'm trying to think what else. A Ghost Story, and then there's something else which I could have swore I enjoyed, but for some reason all the films are blending together at this point in time.
Any family films? Besides the Lego movie, the Lego Batman movie we talked about, any other family films have enjoyed?
I enjoyed Cars 3 quite a bit.
Okay.
And again, there's another one that's supposed to be for little boys, but both my girls enjoyed Cars 3.
And Cars 2 was terrible. So you talked about that rebound when we talked about 4. Yeah, that certainly.
Yeah, I actually thought Cars 3 was the best of the bunch.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it has that kind of Pixar nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, that's also part of the storyline.
Okay.
Is how... can't think of the lead car's name right at this point.
Oh, I can't either. It's not Mater. Mater's the tow truck.
No. But the whole vibe is of looking back to the past and having fond memories. And here, it's about the Rusty's team, moving on.
Okay.
And, having a new racer on the circuit and coming to terms with not being able to race around the track as fast as you once could.
I'm trying to remember the name of the car. Anyways, all right. Well,
but yeah, Cars 3
was
it's worth checking out.
Cool. So, anything else you want to talk a little bit about? Now Playing.
Now Playing airs in Westerville, and hopefully we'll get it to the point where it's fully functioning online. So you can't stream it live, but you should eventually be able to stream it. But we shoot Now Playing every other week.
Okay.
On the campus of Otterbein University in Westerville, Ohio.
Yeah. You guys never put them up on YouTube or anything like that? Is it a proprietary thing?
Yes, there are some issues.
There's some issues there that they want it for their specific... Otterbein would like it for their specific content purposes, I presume.
Not as much that, although we do properly document, cite the video clips that we use. But there have been some...
Issues. Oh, legalities.
Yes. So, but yeah, eventually it'll be up on the WOCC website.
Okay.
People can go in there and check it out.
Cool. Or you can watch it on WOCC TV3 if you live in Westerville or the northern part of Columbus.
That's right.
There you go. And it airs when? Well, you always say it's like SportsCenter.
It's like SportsCenter.
It's always on.
It's on all the time. So it has designated time slots, but it's also used... every now and again for programming filler material.
Well, that's gotta be a feather in your cap for you and Paul, right? Or for you and Mark, right?
Yeah.
But, hey, you're like the utility guy on the baseball team, you know?
Right, yeah, we fill any spot available.
All right, well, on that note, Paul, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
All right, and we'll have you back on towards the end of the year and just see how some of these films, like Justice League and Star Wars and that, how they pan out. Sound good?
Sounds good. I look forward to it.
All right. I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up this episode.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Paul Markoff. Thoroughly enjoy having Paul on. He brings a different perspective to movies that I don't have, and we get to sit down and talk about them and debate about what movies we liked and didn't like, etc., etc. And so Paul will be joining us again later on at the end of the year as we'll recap some of those big movies that are coming out in the fall and in the winter. If you get a chance, you live in Westerville. Watch WOCC. Watch Now Playing. Paul and Mark do a great job on that show. But let's talk about a couple of wrestling-related items I want you to know about. There's two big shows happening in the state of Ohio. One in the Northeast, one in kind of the Northwest. I say kind of because I'm not 100% sure that Norwalk, Ohio is all the way in the Northwest, but hey, Nonetheless, let me tell you about them. OCW returns to action this Saturday night, August 26th at the OCW Arena. 7 o'clock is when things kick off there. That's up in Akron at 2910 South Main Street. OCW is crowning a new women's champion, so you don't want to miss that. OCWrestling.net is where you can get more details. And then on Sunday, August 27th in Norwalk, Ohio at the Huron County Fairgrounds, Old Wrestling returns with its 5th annual extravaganza. If you need any information about that show, and I'm very excited for both of these shows, definitely check out oldwrestling.com. That's OLDEwrestling.com. As I said, I think these are going to be two big events that you don't want to miss when it comes to independent professional wrestling here in Ohio. Let me tell you where you get in touch with me. If you would like to do so, you can shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. Maybe you can give me a hard time for ruining the movie L. What can I say? It was a shitty movie. But anyways, I digress. You can find me on Twitter at PVDMVP, and you can also contact me through the Facebook page of this podcast. That's, of course, facebook.com/PVDcast. And, of course, need I remind you that you have 7 different ways to get this podcast. You can get it through PVDcast.com. You can get it on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Pod Paradise, and of course the Echo Network. So pick whichever way is easiest for you to listen to the PVD cast. And by the way, tell a friend or two. So with that, I know it's been a little bit of a long episode again, so I'm going to get on out of here. I will chat at each and every one of you later. And until then, stay righteous and stay independent.